Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, continuing the discussion, we've had a couple of discussions about expecting the unexpected in your estate planning. And this is an interesting series in that you can kind of plan for the unexpected if you have the proper estate planning. So why don't you review where we've been a little
bit? And expecting the unexpected. So somehow it's a shock that we have a health incident. Somehow it's a shock to us that our memory starts to not be as sharp. Somehow it's a shock to us if we get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or memory issues. And yet, why is this a shock when we know day by day we're getting older? So my premise for this show, or this series in the Legacy and Faith Show, is that this should not be a shock. We need to expect that we are going to need assistance at some point in our life. As a matter of fact, if you hit the age of 65, then you have a 75% chance or more of needing assistance at some point or another in your lifetime.
75%.
75%. So there is a 3 in 4 chance that at some point in your life, you're going to need someone to stand next to you and assist you make some type of a decision, whether it's a health decision, a financial decision, a moving decision, some assistance one way or another. And if you reach 65, then 22% of 65-year-olds, so 22% of 65-year-olds already have mild cognitive impairment. And as you age, that just increases year by year. And so I forget the other stat. I had it at my fingertips. I've lost it. But if you reach into your 80s, then that jumps back up into the 70% tile again. So if you are going to live a long life, so medical technology can continually save us nowadays, but it does not necessarily mean that medical technology has the way to put us back to the same position that we were. In other words, we live a more compromised lifestyle when we have health incidences as we age through our 70s and into our 80s. And so that is kind of the premise and the background of where we've been. We've talked about, well, should I bring on my kids onto checking accounts or onto the home? And we addressed that last week. So please don't do that. Listen to last week's show. You can find all of our past podcasts at legacyandfaith.com. So we've kind of been building that this is not an unexpected thing, but yet many of us are not prepared. We don't have a solid estate plan. Estate planning actually is one of the key factors in ensuring that you will have the right people around you to help when you need assistance, and we have the right plan around you so that your finances are going to be used in the way that you want it used to ensure your long-term financial stability and your long-term safety. So estate planning is a large piece of the answer. I'm not saying that that's the end-all be-all, right? I'm an estate planner, so of course it has to be a large part. But it's not the only factor. However, it is a primary factor, from my perspective, that will assist and make sure that we have the proper instructions so that you can be well taken care of. I tell clients all the time, my first job is to take care of you as an individual. Make sure that you are going to be safe and that your finances are going to be used for you first. Then when you pass away, then I can turn to the kids, to the charities, to other family members, and I can make sure that whatever you have left over that was not used by you can get safely with tax schemes and everything else to the proper individuals. But job number one, got to make sure my clients are safe. So therefore, we got to talk about that this is an expected issue, but we treat it as though it's a surprise.
Okay, well, we've reached that point then where maybe you do need assistance. Who decides whether you need assistance or not? Do you make that decision, or does the spouse, or Who's in the driver's seat? Is that part of the estate plan who makes this decision?
Absolutely. It's a part of the estate plan. So let's talk about what happens in a situation without a solid estate plan. Number one, mom or dad are showing symptoms that they are not making good decisions. Maybe it is as severe as they're no longer able to take care of themselves. And you're noticing at home that they're not eating as much. They can't remember to take their medications in the proper order. So that's already far down the road. Now, most of us have been around some sort of doctor system by the time we get into our 70s and definitively by our 80s. And so many doctors will already have what we call a baseline, which is a cognitive baseline to kind of say, yes, your cognitive abilities are continually weakening. Many times we don't have that. And so if we're at a place to where we're seeing specifically, it would be kids my age. My parents are in their 80s. And so it would be someone my age that's watching their parents going, okay, mom and dad are not making the same decisions as they used to. So then what's the process? Well, there is a medical process that can be a part of what goes on. Most documents that I review, even in estate planning, the way that it is determined that someone needs assistance is that a doctor or two doctors determine whether or not that individual can manage their financial affairs, okay? And if they cannot manage their financial affairs, then a doctor or the two doctors will write a letter saying, I have come to the conclusion that this person is has cognitive impairment and they should not be managing their financial affairs. That will turn most power of attorneys on, financial powers of attorney. So you'll take that letter with the financial power of attorney to say, hey, I'm the person who can now step in and assist my parents. I can gain access to their bank accounts. I could sell their house if they needed permanent transition. I can talk to the financial investor or the financial advisor to help maneuver assets or ask for finances to be transferred to the bank account, all those things.
Yeah, what if the parent doesn't want to get that opinion from the doctor?
Yeah.
Won't go to the doctor.
It is a battle sometimes. And and I understand that battle. Boy, we are created to be independent, right? Our God is dependent upon nobody. So therefore, we are made in his image, and it is a deep-seated value of many people to be independent. To their fighting day, they could be making very poor decisions, and they will fight for their independence, and it becomes that struggle, which is, I am not going to go to a doctor. And so there is a battle. Now, in the doctor system, as I understand it, I am not a medical doctor, which is there are cognitive tests that they are giving. What did you eat for breakfast last week? What state are you in? What's your age? Can you remember when your birthday is? There's a laundry list of questions that a cognitive test is trying to determine how much of your memory do you have long-term versus have you forgotten things more short-term? No, it's not. I put the keys in a different place and now I can't find them. Mm. That could be it, but I think we all do that. But it is more about determining how much they are able, patient is able to remember. What I've seen, this is completely unfounded with statistics or anything else, is this is just Paul Grant's observation. I could be 100% wrong. It's okay. But is that short-term memory begins to wane first, and people can remember their childhood with stellar colors and stories.
Songs.
But, yes, but then all of a sudden, it's tough to remember a conversation we had last week. Mm. And so when we begin to see that, then doctors are an option. Now, in good estate planning, I know many individuals who do not have a strong trust system in the medical profession, whether that's warranted or unwarranted, that's just where they're at. And so deal with clients with all different spectrums, some who fully say, no, a doctor must be a part of this process, and other people who look at me going, absolutely no doctors. Okay, so what can be done then? Well, there is some flexibility even in Washington law, specifically with financial powers of attorney, and we can do it in a trust model as well, which is we can build, for lack of better terminology, a panel. Who would be on a panel to make this very critical decision? A panel could be anyone that you believe knows you well and you implicitly trust that says, if that person says I'm having difficulties, I'm more likely to believe that person than I am a doctor.
And you can sign off that on that in advance.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, in your
plan. In estate planning, this can be done. If you have no estate plan, then we're going to lean upon the traditional doctor system. Okay. So if you have no estate planning, then you haven't used your voice of how do I want to be determined that I need assistance. I think that this is one of the biggest decisions that a person can make, other than maybe who you marry, which is I am about ready to make a decision that this group of people, that they can determine whether or not I am able to continue to assist myself and make proper financial decisions for myself and maybe even proper medical decisions for myself. Now, for many individuals, they would rather have a spouse, kids that are around them if they have good relationships with kids, best friends who know them well, who have been in long relationships with them. Those are the type of individuals that many clients would rather make this critical decision than, like you were talking about, Mark, being drug off to a doctor that you're going, I don't even know this person who is going to be testing me. This may be the first time you've ever seen this doctor.
Right.
And if you're already having a hard time with putting some of the pieces together with competency, with getting everything aligned, then you walk in with greater emotional insecurity.
Sure.
And what I have seen is that when emotions start to take over, then things even shut down more. It's harder to find that connection piece. As a matter of fact, I think that's true of anyone. If I'm in a highly emotional circumstance, am I going to think as clearly as if that circumstance was removed from my life? Well, the answer is no. So now, if you're already having cognitive impairment and we're emotional because we're not trusting the system, because kids are insisting that we go, boy, I think that's a really unfortunate recipe. So is there another way? Yes, there's definitively another way. So we can use a trust instrument. That's one of two different instruments that we can use in estate planning. We can either use a will or we can use a trust. And in a trust instrument, we can lay out a panel that says, hey, if this panel of trusted people that I know and I know they have my back, they're going to do what is in my best interest. If they say it, it's probably true. That person who uses a panel is probably, well, actually, I have seen it. They are far more likely to say, I trust the people that I've put in my life to make this decision versus oftentimes a complete stranger doing a medical test only. So there are other opportunities of developing the mechanism by which you have control of saying, I might not be able to be making the best decisions for myself. And so, yes, there's other ways, but it does take the first step of actually getting your estate plan done well. And that's where we need to actually take our action step, which is call the office, head over to our website, and get in contact with us so that we can actually help you.
Expecting the unexpected in estate planning is the theme this week. We'll continue with more in just a moment. Like, what if you don't have a deep bench? You don't have a lot of family, don't have a spouse, don't have kids that you trust. What do you do then? We'll address that issue and a few more as we come back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith. Faith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul dealing with the unexpected in estate planning.
But it's expected.
It's expected. When you've planned for it with your estate plan, and we touched a little bit on when you need that assistance, who do you trust? Normally you'd trust a panel of family, spouse.
Yeah.
What if you don't have family and spouse that you trust? Who's in that panel of people?
Yeah, and that becomes more difficult, actually. And I'm not so sure that I have all the answers for this one. This one actually is very difficult. There are many individuals who have never had kids, or maybe your children are not that trustworthy. Maybe you don't have a strong relationship with them. And so while that may be a natural inclination to say, well, my kids will make this decision, but yet if you don't have them, then where do we go? So again, that most intimate relationship, if you're married, that's the first person that we bring in. I would then start looking and asking questions about, well, then who do you have relationship with? Do you go to church? Are there people in your church that you have a deeper relationship with that would be willing to, that if you had a health incident, they would be your phone call? They would be the ones who would come over and assist you. So I'm starting to then try to go through the different relationships that someone has. And ultimately, if we don't have many relationships in our life, if we don't have those trusted relationships, we actually may be leaning upon the more traditional system, which is then a doctor needs to step in, or a doctor with one other person. Mm-hmm. So even if we can just find one trusted person, then we can link them with a doctor, and at least that one person has a voice in the process instead of only a doctor system. And again, I'm not saying that doctors are a wrong choice. Many people elect that they want physicians to do a more traditional approach. Great, not a problem. But for those who want more than just a doctor, or don't have the same confidence in the medical system, then we need to find those relationships of who would take care of you if you were in a pickle. So who are some of your first phone calls? Do you have siblings? Even if they're older and they may be going through their stuff, can they handle a phone call? Are they cognitively alert? And so could they make a decision even from afar, and they would know whether or not you need assistance, even though they're not in the same city? So I agree, that's a really difficult place to be in, but through good discussion, we can usually build
ahead of time,
something, yes, ahead of time, definitively. Because if we have no plan, then we're just going to go upon the traditional system of a doctor, right? So more difficult, but we still have the opportunity to build something that a person desires to protect themselves.
Okay, let's move into some of the documents and how they work in this situation. A healthcare power of attorney, we've touched on that in some previous broadcasts. How do those come into effect then?
Yeah, and so having these documents is actually really important. A healthcare power of attorney, that if you cannot make a medical decision for yourself, if a doctor does not believe that you are comprehending the severity or the nature of the decision being put before you, then they may want to look to someone else to say, can you assist? Can you step in? Most of the time, people are saying, yes, that is a good plan of attack. And so even at that point, they may never ask you for your healthcare power of attorney. However, if you make a decision that is contrary to what they are saying in our medical knowledge, this is the best decision for the patient. And if you say, no, I want to go in a different way, that's the point where someone may go, okay, then I need this this healthcare power of attorney to demonstrate that you are legally empowered to step in and assist the patient. Otherwise, they do have an ethical duty to move in a direction that they believe is medically best for the person before them.
What about the living will?
So a living will is a little bit different. That is more, that's the end of life document.
Okay.
So it a lot of different names, but in essence, if you are on life support, if doctors have said there's really no hope of recovery, we don't believe they're ever coming off of life support. My documents are even more narrow to where doctors need to write in your permanent medical records that indeed it takes two doctors to actually go through the living will in my documents that say you have an incurable injury, disease, or illness. You're permanently unconscious and death is imminent. So it's a little bit of a higher standard than other documents that I see in the marketplace. It's more narrow. And so then there's things such as, do you want to remain on life support and for how long? Do you want a feeding tube? Do you want hydration? Do you want comfort drugs? And everyone says, yes, give me comfort drugs. Yes and amen. And so that is the living will. The living will is doctors have said there's no hope. And so then what are the decisions that we make? We want to take that off of your family. I've told stories that I talked to my dad even recently. It was probably 4 years ago. And he's already at 80 or in his 80s by the time we have this conversation. And my grandma, she passed away when I was 19. And so that's 30 plus years ago. No, I'm not giving away my full age. It's 56. And so so she died 30 plus years ago. And my dad had to make the decision to take her off of life support. And in his 80s, he's still tearing up saying, I don't know if I made the right decision. So she didn't have this vital, critical document that says, look, if I'm in this circumstance, this is my choice. This is how I want people to respond. Instead, it was put on my dad's shoulders. And he still carries it to this day. That's what we don't want. That's why this end of life, this living will, is such a critical document.
What's the difference between that and the durable power of attorney?
So a durable power of attorney is the financial component. Okay. That if I cannot make decisions, that's the financial power of attorney. And so durable means that if I'm signing it today, if I end up becoming incapacitated, it doesn't change the document. It doesn't change what I have, the elections I've made. So that's a way that people can actually utilize your finances, assist you, pay your bills. So these are all critical foundational documents. I don't care if you use a will. I don't care if you use a trust. All of those documents that we just mentioned, your financial, your medical, your end of life document, all of those must be in a will package or a revocable living trust package. They're critical documents to ensuring your safety long term.
How about what if other people rely upon you? Should good estate planning anticipate this and how to manage this?
Oh, yes, definitely. As a matter of fact, it should be in multiple of these documents. So a will is a document that turns on at death. So that means whatever I have left over goes to certain people. So the will, your last will, is not going to assist you, okay? But a revocable living trust, the living component, gives instructions on who you want your finances during your lifetime, who can use and participate in your finances. So you have a successor trustee. We want to give them instructions on support my children. So if you have minor children specifically, they need to be worked into the plan, right? So if I had something go wrong with me, I have minor children, they need to use some of my finances, some of my estate. Now, my girls are in their 20s, and I thought that if they were out of my house that I wouldn't have to financially support them. But every parent on the planet knows that even if they're in their 20s, unless you're hardcore saying, I'm not going to support you anymore, somehow we support our kids. What if you have a child who is disabled? They may always need financial assistance. If you don't add that into your plan, then how do we have the legal ability to use your finances when the trust or the financial power of attorney says, use these assets in my best interest? So if we don't have other beneficiaries, actually the person who is trying to assist you, they may have a deep insecurity if the document is poorly done or if you've used a templated document. If If you've used an estate planner in the past who has not asked you these questions and built in the provisions to ensure the safety net of your family, should you not be able to make the decision? So these are critical, critical decisions that need to be in your estate plan, because if you happen to have a health incident, again, we can anticipate that you're going to have a health incident. When you have the health incident, are there people who still financially rely upon you? If your documents are not done properly, you are going to put your agent, the person who is helping you, in a pickle. And it is potentially a legal pickle, specifically if your family is not perfectly peaceful. So you have another beneficiary who in the background is pointing the finger. You supported this person and you didn't have the legal authority to do so. It's just not where we want to go. So good estate planning can resolve all of these issues. We should expect the unexpected in estate planning.
Expecting the unexpected in estate planning, the topic of the last few shows. You can hear the previous episodes too at legacyandfaith.com. People are intrigued by your approach to this subject, and they want to find out more. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, right there, what you just said, legacyandfaith.com. It's our website. There's past podcasts. There's upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.